What thou sayest, my daughter, is boldly conceived and not without sense. One hears it with applause. But show me thine aim, for I see it not yet, and confide in me whither thou thinkest, for it is dark to me. Of thy people, she answered, am I in spirit. Of thy people alone can I be in the flesh and with my womanhood. Thou hast opened mine eyes. Let me open thine. A branch grows from thy trunk, eldest son of thy fourth son, and is like a palm tree by the waters, and like a slender reed in the fence. Speak then with Judah, thy lion, that he give me to for a bride. Jacob was exceedingly surprised. So that was thy meaning, he answered, and thither went thy thought. Truly, truly, I should not have guessed it. Thou hast spoken to me of the responsibility I have taken on, and makest me now concerned precisely on thine account. Verily, I can speak with my lion and make my word avail with him. But can I justify it? Welcome art thou to my house. It opens its arms with joy to receive thee. But shall I have trained thee up to God so that thou becomest unblessed? Unwillingly do I speak with doubt of any one in Israel, but the sons of the daughter of Shua are indeed an unable breed, and good for nothings before the Lord, from whom I prefer to avert my gaze. Truly, I hesitate very much to go along with thy wish, for it is my conviction the lads are no good for wedlock, and anyhow, not with thee. With me, said she firmly, if with nobody else. Bethink thee after all, my master and lord. It was irretrievably decreed that Judah have sons. Now they are as they are, and at least must be sound at the core, for in them is Israel, and they cannot be passed over, nor can one leave them out, save that they themselves fall away and do not stand the test of life. Unavoidable is it that they should in turn have sons, at least one of them, one at least. The firstborn, the palm tree by the brook. I love him, and I will build him up with my love to a hero in Israel. A heroine, at least, he responded, art thou thyself, my daughter, and I trust in thee to perform it. So he promised her to make his word good with Judah his lion, and his heart was full of varying and conflicting feelings. For he loved the woman with what strong feeling was left him, and was glad to present her to a man of his own blood. Still, he was sorry, and it went against his honor, that it should be no better man. And again, he knew not why, the whole idea made him somewhat to shudder. Not through us. Judah did not live with his brothers in the grove of Mamre, in his father's house. Since he'd become good friends with the man Hira, he pastured farther down towards the plain and the grazing ground by Adullam, and there his son his eldest, and Tamar celebrated their wedding, provided by Jacob, who had sent for his fourth and made his word avail with him. Why should Judah have kicked against the pricks? He consented, not too gracefully, with rather a gloomy air, but he did consent with no ado, and so Tamar was given to to wife. It befits us not to look behind the veil of this marriage. Even in the beginning no one liked it, and humanity has always expressed itself baldly and brusquely as to the facts, finding it too much trouble, as always, to soften them with pity or excuse. The factors of failure were present in it. On one side, historic ambition to play a part in history, combined with the gifts of Astarte, and on the other, enervation, a youth capable of standing no serious test in life. We shall do well to follow the example of tradition and boldly and brusquely state that Judah's quite shortly after the wedding, died. Or, as tradition has it, the Lord slew him. Well, the Lord does all, and all that happens may be regarded as his doing. In Tamar's arms the youth died of a hemorrhage which would probably have killed him even if he had not choked to death with the blood. Some people may feel relieved that at least he did not die quite alone, like an animal, but in the arms of his wife, though again it is distressing to picture her dyed with the life-blood of her young husband. Dark-browed, she stood up. She washed herself clean of the blood, and straightway demanded for her husband Onan, Judah's second son. The determination of this woman has always had something staggering about it. She went up to Jacob and lamented to him. In a way, she accused God to him, so that the old man was seriously embarrassed for Yah. "My husband has died and left me," she said. "Thy grandson, in a trice and the twinkling of an eye. How is one to understand that? How can God do so?"
"He can do everything," Jacob replied. "Humble thyself. He does, when occasion requires, the most frightful things. For to be able to do everything one wants is, when you come to think of it, a great temptation. There are vestiges of the desert. Try to explain it so to thyself. He sometimes falls on a man and slays him, whether or no, without rhyme or reason. One must just accept it."
"I accept it," she replied, "so far as God is concerned, but not for my own part, for I do not recognize my widowhood. I cannot, and I may not. Since one has fallen away, the next must take his place, that my fire be not quenched, which still lives, and to my husband no name remain, and nothing else upon earth. I speak not for myself alone and for the slain one. I speak generally, and for all time. Thou, Father and Lord, must make thy word avail in Israel, and exalt it into a law, that where there are brothers, and one dies childless, his wife shall take no strange man from outside, but her brother-in-law shall step in and wed her. But the first son whom she bears shall he confirm after the name of his deceased brother, that his name shall not be uprooted out of Israel."
"But if it please not the man," Jacob objected, "to take his sister-in-law?"
"In that case," said Tamar firmly, "she shall stand forth before the people and say, 'My brother-in-law refuses to reawaken for his brother a name in Israel, and will not marry me.' Then shall one require him and speak with him. But if he stand and speak, 'I like not to take her,' then shall she stand to him before all the people, and take one of his shoes from off his foot, and spit upon it, and answer and say, 'Thus shall one do to every man who will not build up his brother's house.' And his name shall be Barefooter."
"Then certainly he will bethink himself," said Jacob. "And thou art right, my daughter, in so far as it will be easier for me to make my word avail with Judah that he should give thee Onan for a husband, if I make a general law on which I can support myself, which I have proclaimed under the tree of wisdom."
It was the brother-in-law marriage which, at Tamar's instigation, was thus founded, and became a matter of history. This country girl had certainly a flair for the historical. Skipping over the stage of widowhood, she now received the boy Onan as her husband, though Judah showed small desire for the arrangement or the collateral marriage, and the person most concerned even less. Judah, sent for to his father from the grazing ground of Adullam, rebelled a long time against the father's counsel, and denied that it was advisable to repeat with his second what had turned out so unhappily with his first. Besides, Onan was only 20, and if capable of marriage at all, certainly not yet ripe for it, and neither willing nor disposed thereto. "But she will take off his shoe and all that, if he refuse to build up his brother's house, and will be called Barefooter all his days."
"Thou makest Israel as though that were established fact, and it is so only because thou hast but now thyself introduced it. I know well by whose advice."
"God speaks out of the maid," responded Jacob. "He has brought her to me that I make her acquaint with him, that he may speak out of her." Then Judah rebelled no more, but ordered the wedding. It is beneath the dignity of this narrator to pry into the secrets of the bedchamber. So then, baldly and brusquely, Judah's second son, Onan, in his own way quite pleasing, and his way was a dubious one, was,
again in his own way, quite a character. He had a deep-seated perversity of disposition, amounting to a judgment upon himself and a denial of life. I do not mean his own personal life, not exactly that, for he possessed much self-love, and rouged and adorned himself like any dandy. Yet in the very soul of him he denied life, for in those inmost depths he uttered an emphatic no to any continuation of life after or through him. We are told that he was angry at being forced to become a surrogate husband and raise up seed not to himself but to his brother. That is probably true. So far as words and even thoughts come in question, he might put the thing so himself. But in reality, for which words and thoughts are only paraphrases, the knowledge was inborn in all the sons of Judah that life was a blind alley, that whatever way it might take, in no case would, should, could, or might it continue further through them, the three sons. Not through us, they said with one voice. And in their way, they were right. Life and lustiness might go their ways. The three turned up their noses. Particularly Onan, and his prettiness and charm were merely an expression of the narcissism of a man beyond whom the line does not continue. Forced into marriage, he resolved to make a fool of the womb. But he reckoned without Tamar's strength of will and her Astarte equipment, which confronted his perversity as one thundercloud confronts another. Like thunderclouds they met, and lightning followed, the stroke of death. He was paralyzed and died in her arms from one second to the next. His brain stood still, and he was dead. Tamar rose up and straightway demanded that Shelah be given her for husband, he, Judah's youngest born, being then only 16 years old. She might be called the most amazing figure in this whole story. Few will be found to deny it. This time she did not prevail. Even Jacob hesitated, if only in anticipation of Judah's emphatic objection, and that was not long in coming. They called him a lion, but like a lioness he stood before his last cub, whatever he might or might not be worth, and would not budge. Never, he said. What? So he is to die too? In blood, like one? Without, like the other? God shall prevent it. It shall not be. I have obeyed thy summons, Israel, and hastened up to thee from my wife's kin in the plain where Shua's daughter bore me this son, and where she now lies sickened, for she is ailing and drooping towards death. And if Shelah die too, then I am bare. There is no question of disobedience here, for thou mayest indeed not command me at all, and thou makest only a hesitant suggestion. But I hesitate not only. I say no and never, for thee and for me. What thinks this woman? That I shall give her my ewe lamb, that she destroy it? That is an Ishtar who slays her beloved. A devourer of youth is she, a greed insatiable. Besides, this one is still a boy, still under full years, so that the lamb will avail her nothing in the fold of her arms. Really, nobody could have imagined Shelah, at least not now, in the role of married man. He looked more like an angel than a human being, very smug and unserviceable, and had neither beard nor base. It is only on account of the shoe and the rest of it, Jacob reminded him quaveringly, if the boy refuses to build up his brother's house. I will tell thee a thing, my friend, quoth Judah. If this devourer go not now away, and put on widow's garb, and continue to do her seemly mourning in her father's house, as the bereaved of two husbands, and behave quietly, then I myself, as sure as I am thy fourth son, will take off her shoe before all the people, and do all the rest of it, and accuse her openly of being a vampire, that she may be stoned or burned. That is going too far, said Jacob in painful agitation, in thy dislike of my suggestion. Going too far? And how far wouldst thou go if they would take Benjamin from thee and try to send him on some very dangerous journey? Who, after all, is not thine only one, but merely thy youngest? Thou guardest him with thy staff and keepst him close, that he too may not be lost, and scarce can he go out on the high road. Well, Shelah is my Benjamin, and I resist. Everything in me rises up against yielding him up. I will make thee a fair proposal, Jacob said. for this argument had gone home to him. Just in order to gain time, and not grossly to offend the girl, thy daughter-in-law, we will not reject her demand, but wean her from it. Go to her and say, My son Sheila is still too young, and is even unripe for his years. Remain a widow in thy father's house till the lad grow up. Then I will give him to thee, that he may raise up seed to his brother. So shall we silence her demand for some years before she can renew it. Then perhaps she will get used to the widow's state, and not renew it at all. Or if she do, then we will console her, saying, with more or less truth, that the lad is still not ripe. Be it so, said Judah. It is the same to me what we tell her, if only I do not have to yield that tenderness and pride into the burning embrace of Moloch.